So I'll start off by saying I don't condone piracy, but there is so much. You can find so much.
I'll either go Louis or Kyo or Kyuryu. So
whichever one works for you.
Guys, welcome to episode 13 of Streamforge Radio. I'm Xavier. I am your co-host and co-founder at Streamforge. I'm here with Meredith. And today we have Kyoryu Hunter, aka Kyo, aka Louis. He has almost 4,500 followers on Twitch, nearly 300,000 channel views. He's the host of the podcast Podazarus and admin of Team Retrosaurus. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. He's an avid retro gamer, plays Japanese RPG, horror games, other niche genres, and he's a TikToker, part of the LGBTQIA plus inclusivity, and activist, and a lover of dogs, which is, I know, is going to resonate a lot with Meredith here. And I am hoping you guys start talking about dogs in that episode.
The first thing I asked when I got in here was like, is that a dog you have right there? And there were more.
And I was like, yeah, always.
There's many. Well, welcome, guys. Welcome, Louis. Welcome, Meredith, to this episode. Welcome, everybody at home, in the car, wherever you are. Super happy to all be part of this this episode. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing fine today. I just finished my stream for the day, so now I'm just kind of waiting around for the mail to get here and, you know, just relaxing.
So you just finished your stream. So you're starting fairly early in the streamer verse, if you will,
yeah,
right?
I start at 7 a.m. Central Time, which I am not a morning person at all, but I used to live in Japan. When I started streaming, my start time was like 8 or 9 p.m. there. But when I moved back, I'm like, well, I'll just keep the same time, not realizing how awful that is, because 7 a.m. is a terrible time to be awake. Yeah. So I wake up at like 6, 6:30 to start my day, and it's coffee is my best friend at this point.
Mm. How come you were in Japan?
I used to be an ALT over there on the JET program. So I was an assistant language teacher. I taught English in elementary school, junior high, and I actually told or taught students all the way to, I think I had a 90-year-old student. Mm. So it was like all the variety of ages. It was a fun job. It was kind of like one of those, you were only there for a set amount of years. I got there, ended in August of 2019. And it was right before pandemic started, actually, or else I would actually be there even longer, because everyone that was there when I left is still there because the border control after that. But
they got stuck there. Yeah.
Mm.
So you're like the Lego of English teaching from 4 to 99 years of age, right?
It was.
Maybe it was, you're not a Lego experience. Fan. Hopefully, some.
It took me a second. I got it. Yeah, it was definitely a mixed bag every
Meredith
time.
Like
what
that.
I was going to get. But it was a fun job.
I got
job.
It.
I don't think I'd go back to it though. Not
why not?
I've heard it's really tough.
It's mostly the business culture of Japan. It's not that I loved my students. They always had kids say really weird stuff, especially in languages they don't fully comprehend. So the fun of that was always like the bright part of my day. But like, Japanese business culture is very taxing, and there's a lot of hierarchy to things. And I'm from the Midwest. If I need to get something done, I want to get it done ASAP. And sometimes that might actually take 2 to 3 weeks for someone higher above me to decide yes or no right at the end.
Okay. I can see how this may be bothering you, especially for a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. Now, I've done some research on your name, because Kyoryu is Japanese, and you know, turns out Kyoryu Hunter means dinosaur hunter. Mm. Am I right? Yeah, did I do my research correctly? Okay, good. Good. Dinosaur Hunter. That's a pretty dope name, if you ask me. Why did you go with that name? And why did you go with the Japanese version of that name, if you will?
So, I grew up in the 90s. So I've been obsessed with dinosaurs since I was a kid. So all my stuff always had like some variation of dinosaur in the name. Well, when I moved to Japan, I made like my own, like everyone does when they move out of the country. They're like, oh, I'm going to make a, you know, my own Twitter account. And it's going to be stuff from that country. So I made one. It was a different name. It was Kokusai Kyoryu. And that ended up being my name for stuff. But once I came to Twitch, it was even harder for people to pronounce. So I settled on Kyoryu Hunter because I'm like, well, I like Japanese version of dinosaurs fun to say. I was playing Monster Hunter initially when I started streaming, and there we go. Yeah. I wish it was more fun than that, but it was really just just that.
That makes sense.
Yeah, fair enough. Dinosaurs are pretty awesome. Mm. I think, like, it's kind of sad. Like, my kid, I got a four-year-old kid, and he's really deep into dinosaurs. He has been for, you know, several years, a couple of years now. I don't know why we have such a fascination with dinosaurs as, or most of us, I would say, with dinosaurs when we were young. But then we kind of like typically lose that interest. But like I got back to it myself with my, you know, with my kid. As my kid was like getting into it, I got back to it. And it's fascinating. Like where that does that, you know, fascination come from? Because like, as you said, you had it as a kid, but you kind of kept it as you grew up. Can you tell us more about this?
I think as a kid, like, dinosaurs are cool because they're these big, scary, reptilian or, you know, avian-looking monsters. And they were real, but we always learn more about them. So every time, so every new generation of kids, when they have dinosaurs, they're different from the old ones. And, like, I think we grew up with, like, Jurassic Park and stuff, too. So that was another cool movie. Just a lot of 80s stuff had dinosaurs, too. I guess it's just because they were real things on Earth that were big and cool. And we can kind of make up whatever we want with them. I never really lost it too much. Like I did have my period of time when I became an adult where I was just like, you know, whatever dinosaurs. But then like, for me, like coming back to it was, I know you grew up with Power Rangers, I'm assuming to an extent.
Sure.
Yeah. So yep. We had the Power Rangers there. Well, then they found the Japanese version of it and they had not one or two, but three dinosaur series at that time. So the last one I watched actually had Kyoryuger was the name. So Kyoryu was in that and they kind of brought it all back for me. But I think it's just because they're fun. They're just kind of fun.
They're fun. They're fascinating. Obviously, it's like, yeah, as you said, like it's almost like as if it was another planet, you know, literally at the time. That's pretty cool. I heard you were a video game collector. Now, that's something that's very close to my heart, as most of our listeners know by now.
Is that your collection behind you on the shelves?
It's a fraction of it,
I would say. Part of it, yeah.
So, yeah, it got out of hand a few years back. But yes, it is. And but I'm interested in learning more about your collection and what made you start collecting.
I'm really sad that I can't show it off. What you see in the background, I just was like scrambling. I'm like, my shelves have been bare because like I'm packing to move at the moment. We're moving like within the next month. So I take forever to get ready. I need to make sure everything has its space. Well, all the stuff I care about, it's going into a box that's labeled. Everything I don't care, it's being thrown into something else together with something else. But I've always collected games since I was a kid. Like people would like have extra copies of Pokemon. I would just trade them stuff for it. And I eventually amassed like, I think I have duplicates of every Pokemon game from the 90s, and then my friends would be like, I'm gonna get rid of this, and I'm like, you know what, I'll take it. So now I just have a ton of games, and I like collecting them because, well, when they're fun, they're games, there's a lot of cool art in them. I like the idea of preserving a lot of older games that are like, you know, being forgotten or the company's gone now. Just the preservationist side of it's really important for me as well. And I also want to be that friend that someone's like, I really want to play this game. Like, I have it. Let me go grab it and you can borrow it. So like, it's just kind of, it kind of spiraled from there though. Cause like most games I have, let's see, while I lived in Japan, I bought a bunch of Japanese games. I bought every single Resident Evil game, except for the most recent two in Japanese on their original systems, which that was such a pain to get back over here. Cause those older cases are heavy and you can't replace them. I don't know if you've ever seen like a Japanese or a PAL PS1 case. They don't look like normal jewel cases.
Right.
So I kept all of those and those all weigh a ton. But I just liked having all of them. And then because there was another thing, too, when I started streaming, I'm like, oh, I can collect these and show them off. Now I have a captive audience that has to listen to me talk about my games. So that made it worse. And then recently, the past couple years with the retro market getting a lot more expensive and harder to find, people have just been sending me stuff because they're like, well, I don't need any more. And you seem to care about this. So I've been amassing an even larger collection from people who kind of want someone to take care of their childhood favorite games. Like, I'm playing Star Ocean right now. Someone sent me their childhood copy. They're like, I don't need it. You want to play it, and it's going to a good home, so.
That's cute.
Just kind of, yeah. I know, anytime I get a little note, so I'm a very sentimental person. Every time I get a little note or something, I keep it in the case.
Oh, that's nice.
Everything I mean, yeah, absolutely. The history of the game is, yeah.
Mm. So, my girlfriend is not happy about the amount of stuff I have. But she tends to look the other way when she's ready to play a game, which is, she doesn't have a whole lot of time to play stuff. But when she does, and she's like, well, you have this, right? I'm like, mm-hmm, now you want to play them, huh?
I heard you also play from the original consoles as whenever possible, right? Like, what's your setup like?
Yeah, my setup, can't see it too well over here. I usually just keep out the ones that I'm playing currently. I have a Switch over here, which only recently got used, but I got my old Super Nintendo, got a small PS1, a PS2, and then a Genesis with a 32X. And those are like my, I guess, bread and butter systems. This is what I play most of the time. PS1, Genesis, and PS2. Say, Super Nintendo comes in every once in a while. But I try to play off the original hardware, get the original experience. I don't have a problem with emulation or remasters or whatever. Whatever is more, you know, comfortable or convenient for anyone to play. But I like to have that original experience. That way, when if I don't like something, I can have a good argument. I'm like, well, I played that one on the original thing, and it was not fun, like you said. But
and do you go through like a upscaler, like a FrameMeister or something like that, or just how do you plug that into a capture card?
So I have a RetroTINK 5X, which is the most recent one the guy came out with. It's a really good product. It's a little on the expensive side, but if you're in the hobbyist part of using these, it's, I think, definitely worth it. And with those, I have the HD RetroVision cables, which are the really nice like Cadillac of cables that they have. And every time a new one comes out for a certain system, I make sure to get it. Because even if it's just a little boost of quality, when it comes to the retro scene on Twitch, it's kind of like keeping up with the Joneses a little bit. Like, the best quality video for like certain games is always going to be more preferable to look at, or at least that's what I tell myself to justify buying them. But
yeah, that's a good argument for your for your significant other. You know,
she's just like, whatever, it's your money. It's your money.
It's for work, honey.
I use that so many times.
Yeah. I need 50 new games. What do you mean?
I mean, I can't buy it any other way. And like, definitely Disaster Report was worth the $100. Believe me, it was definitely worth that money.
Yeah.
I say the only downside of these old systems is, do I even have it nearby here? The older controllers are terrible when you're in your 30s with carpal tunnel. They are the worst thing in the world.
That's what we see. If you're on YouTube, like, we see the little, I don't know how you call that thing on your hand. Is that it?
So I don't have, I use this like kinesiology tape with CBD in it for it. And that's actually helped a lot because it relieves that inflammation and stuff. But yeah. I probably would be able to not or get away with not using this if I would just use normal or newer controllers.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. There's not as much R&D going into the conception of these older controllers. Little wink at the N64, my favorite console of all time, but probably the worst controller of all time as well.
Yep, I got mine up here in the box because that's
I can see that. I can see that.
But yeah, that controller, I played through Donkey Kong 64 twice on my stream with the original controller, and the second time I like got about halfway, I'm like, I gotta stop. I can't do this anymore. The NES controller is also another one. I don't know who decided pointy angular corners was the way to go for a controller, but I hope they got a raise.
The NES is a pretty pretty difficult one to play with for a longer period of time, for sure. Tell me about retro collecting. You know, we had Pete Dore last week. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
I know of him from Speedrun or GDQ and stuff like that.
Right. And so, and obviously he's a collector as well, and you know, we've talked about it and why we're collecting. I started collecting video games about 10 years ago or so. I started collecting movies 3 years ago or so, maybe 4. And one of the reasons why I started collecting movies is because I don't want to be tied to like a streaming service when I want to watch like a specific movie. I also want the best quality with, if you know, with a nice equipment and whatnot. And I want to own that movie, and I can again show someone, and you know, that comes over and let's watch a movie. Here's a favorite movie of mine that may not be available on Netflix or on Disney Plus, or maybe I don't want to buy it for, you know, $15 or whatever the price is on certain platforms. Mm. That recently I've gotten an email telling me from one of the, you know, these platforms where you can like redeem your keys and like your movies, and the it's like a your movie like library
and stuff.
Yeah, right. Like I got an email telling me like they were merging and closing down, and it was going to elsewhere. Like I feel like over time we might be start to lose track of where all their movies are going, because it goes to all these different platforms. Anyways, bottom line is, this is one of the reasons why I'm buying my movies now, and I got a movie collection. Do you buy and collect games for similar reasons, for not having to be, you know, for not having to go through, you know, different platforms to buy the digital version of like retro games and things like that?
So yeah, 100%. I'm exactly the same way. Especially because a lot of games are not available digitally. So like the game I was saying earlier, Star Ocean 2, only, I don't think you can buy that in any form. There was a remake on PSP. I don't think it released on the PSN shop, which you have to have a PSP or a Vita to go on that shop and find it anyway, if it's there. And then it came out in Japan on PS4 and Switch over there, but they didn't port it to English. So like, if you want to play that game, you have to track down a what might be minimum $60 for just the discs of the PS1 in maybe good shape. And it's like, you don't even have that option of digital. So for me, that's why a lot of times I just started buying the physical. Some of them are cheap, like 360 games are cheap, and things after a while, the license expires, they come off the shop. Or if you're like someone who's mostly a Nintendo person, they've only recently understood what an account system is. So I can finally re-download my stuff here and there. Like on the Wii, my Wii died. I lost probably about $500 worth of download games because it's dead and they can't retrieve it because they don't have a code from something on it. And then when the Wii U came out, only some things transferred over. And when the Wii U went to the Switch, nothing transferred over. So I like to own my stuff. Digital rights management in the US is not good. You don't own your digital stuff. You can't resell your digital stuff. So
no.
I would rather just buy as much physical as possible. I don't care the fact like I have to download a day one patch that's like, you know, 50 gigabytes and it's half the game anyway, half the time. But like, if I put in that disc and I don't have the internet, I can still play the game for the most part, for almost everything. And if they decide to take it down, if it's digital, and then maybe like most times they keep it so you can re-download, but what if they don't? What if the shop closes down? Like Epic launcher, or you know, like even Ubisoft launchers, what if they close down? You don't have those games anymore. You have to pirate them. So at that point, just buy them physical.
Not endorsing piracy here.
No, of course not.
But it's a great point. And one thing that came to me, I don't know if you have kids.
I do not.
Or no. Okay. So, you know, since since my kid was born, like I've also been in that mentality of like giving him my collection when I move on. Right, when I die, my video game collection, my movie collection, like I think like as a kid you also grow with your parents' stuff. Most kids, like, you know, like you listen to your parents' music, you watch the movies your parents watch, most of us at least. And for me, I used to listen to my dad's music and stuff like that, so I still listen to that. So I like that I'll be able to, you know, give him my collections later on in my life. And so that he can just take it with him, regardless of whatever service. We're not dependent on the services available in 50 years' time, right? Like these games, these movies will be usable, you know, regardless. I mean, as long as you have the machines, the consoles, and the DVD / Blu-ray / 4K Blu-ray, whatever players, you'll be able to use it. So
yeah, that's really cool. That's what I think about as well, because like, I don't have kids currently, but in a couple of years I might. So being able to share those too, especially like the old original way of playing it, like, you know, when they're younger, they might want to play, you know, I want to play what dad played when he was a kid, you know, bust out the old NES and play that with them. It's a fun bonding experience, even if they don't want the collection when they're older. I mean, you still had that experience with them when they're kids.
Yeah, they might keep one one or two games or 10 games out of like the hundreds and thousands you have, you know, like it's, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting too of like this mentality of the actual physical copies of things. Like it's so different talking to like the retro streamers and chatting with Xavier too of like, I feel like no one else in any other aspect of like real life likes the actual physical hard copies of things. So it's just such like an interesting, like kind of refreshing way of being like, no, like I want all of this stuff. Like, please like take up space in my house. Like it's very refreshing to be like, no, like I love these things. I want to actually share physical copies of them with people. And I don't know if it's, you know, like in a generational thing or not, but I think it's very sweet. You guys are very like sentimental. So it's warming my cold little millennial heart.
Well, I'll say one thing, like, you know, I also collect vinyls, and I know vinyls is a pretty big scene. So, like, I call myself a physical media collector. Like, that, I changed my Twitter handle, or not handle, my bio with this, because, like, I collect vinyls, movies, and you know, video games. I think, like, you know, this, like, music is also a place where people collect a lot. People still collect cassettes and CDs.
Yeah, that's true.
It's very niche, but it exists. Movies as well. Movies is a pretty big thing. Like, you know, if you go, like, there's like the Criterion collection. They're like kind of more obscure movies that are handpicked for their qualities, and they're made into, you know, and remastered into physical versions. Now you can also subscribe to their digital streaming service, but you know, they come out with these physical medias, and they're quite popular for the people that, you know, like that. I think there's a quality to some people look for that specific quality that you don't get from streaming. Mm-hmm. You know, putting a vinyl and hearing that little crackling sound and having that warmth that you get from a physical, you know, record. It's not something you can find when streaming on Spotify or you know, even Tidal with like the high end stuff, which is something I use as well, by the way. But it's the same with a movie. If you got a really good TV and just good equipment, you're never going to get the type of quality from streaming that you get from the physical media. But you need to have that sensitivity. Now, that you're bringing on a good point. Maybe, like, generationally, like, younger people don't have that sensitivity. Maybe yet. I don't know. Maybe it's just because they weren't born with those physical medias, right? They're just used to, you know, streaming stuff.
There's definitely a big nostalgia factor to it, like even with CDs, because every once in a while I'm like, I wish I had my old Walkman or something. Like, I'm a millennial as well. When you said that, I'm like, wait, how old are you? I'm like, I'm 33.
Okay, yeah,
so, like,
no,
I grew up with all that
millennial
stuff.
Millennial is a very
I am too. I'm not 50 yet.
That's what I was wondering. I'm like, how old do you think I am?
Okay, no. I think it's funny because like millennial is such a long age span. So like it's funny because I call Xavier like a geriatric millennial because it's true, and he gets super mad at me. And he's like, I'm not like 80 years old or whatever, but I'm like, no, it's just like it's a huge spectrum, right? So no, don't worry, you look plenty
there is a huge gap within millennials.
My
girlfriend's 2.5 years younger than me, and you would think that we were decades apart sometimes the way we talk, because like I was asking her, my sister sent me some things, she's like, how to separate upper and lower millennials. I'm trying to remember one of the questions. It was Nickelodeon's Doug or Disney Doug?
Oh, okay.
And she's like
one.
Disney. I'm like, Nickelodeon had Doug first. She had no idea. But we're only 2 years apart, really. So I'm like, oh, yeah. So there's a big difference, even though same generation, roughly same age group, but no idea about it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that's funny. Okay, before we get too far in, I want to talk about dogs because you brought it up and I'm not going to let it go. So
I won't say no.
Great. And I'm not asking Xavier. So do you have any dogs of your own?
So currently we don't have a dog. Where we live, we can't have one, but we're planning to get one soon. I do have two dogs with my mom back in St. Louis. We have like a Bichon poodle mix. It was a free Craigslist poodle, which apparently is a thing that I did not know about.
We love a free Craigslist dog. Yes. Is it like white?
I love that dog.
Too?
Oh, he's a little bit. He's about 10 years old now. I named him Frank.
Those are my favorite.
And then the dog that you had, what was her name?
Yeah, Annabelle.
Annabelle. Oh, so my dog looks very similar. She's a Yorkie Maltese something mix, but her name is Isabella. So I'm like, oh, they're similar face, similar name.
But yeah, I
love any kind of dogs. I have like an unofficial mascot for my channel, which is my girlfriend's parents' dog, which is this really intense border collie named Biscuit with these, I don't know if you've ever seen a border collie, they have this intense stare when they want something. So we don't have one, but we have one planned that we'll hopefully actually get in July. If everything works out, we're going to move next month, be in a new place at the end of the month, and then there should be Borzoi puppies born this month that we're going to get in July.
Okay, why the Borzoi?
Do you know what that is?
Yes, I do.
So my girlfriend for a long time kept calling Biscuit a long boy. So I didn't know, I didn't realize she just was because he was long. So I'm like, oh, long boys. Yeah. And I kept sending her pictures of Borzois from like Reddit, the subreddit of long boys.
Uh-huh.
And then she fell in love with Borzois. And then she found out we had a breeder in Missouri. And she has mentally planned out this entire dog. It has a name. It has, I think she has a color in mind. What we're going to do with it. She's already buying different collars for different seasons. I get yelled at that I don't care about our dog that's not born yet very often because I'm like, Rhubarb's not real yet. She's like, you don't care about her. We don't even have her.
She exists, okay?
Yeah, she's like, she's real to me. Okay.
Yeah, so, just as real as your games, okay? Let her have it.
Yeah. And like, she's about to finish up her residency for OBGYN, so she's been in school or working and doing stuff for at least the better part of 12 years. So this is her gift to herself that I'm going to be raising.
Yay. I love it. And what a fun, like fun random dog. If y'all listening don't know what a Borzoi is, please look them up. They're beautiful, majestic, long snoot boys and they're wonderful. Mm. So yay. I'm so excited. I'm assuming you've seen like the famous Borzoi on TikTok. I can't remember the account name, but it's like,
Aris? Just,
he's like, maybe. Yeah, I'll have to look it up. But
was it a guy that has three of them?
I think it was. Yeah, he definitely had like multiple.
If it's what I'm thinking of, the oldest one that they had, she passed not that long ago.
Mm.
Oh, no.
She just like, it was like, because they only live like 8 to 12 years, I think. And it was around like 8.5, 9 years. And she just, that was it, which is really sad. But he's been like, he's been a nice person to go to for information about Borzoi. Because since it is such a rare breed to run into. But I'm looking forward to our long noodle horse.
Yay! I'm so excited. Well, we can't wait to catch up with you when you get him or her. So, awesome.
Now, good. I understood about 50% of what just happened. I heard Borzoi and some other stuff. now, I want to talk, before we move on, we have some audience questions, but before we move on to that, I want to hear you talk a bit more about the games you play on stream, because, you play on older consoles, you play retro and stuff like that, but, you know, I've seen you play a lot of RPGs and Japanese JRPGs, you know. And these are, to me, from experience from having, played them on stream as well, a while back now, but they're difficult. It's a difficult type of game to play on stream just because, to me at least, like they're very long and, visually they look similar. Is it difficult to play JRPGs on Twitch?
So when I first started streaming, the first two games I started playing because I didn't know what to do were Monster Hunter World and Final Fantasy XII. I did not complete either of those games on stream, and that led to me having a mindset of JRPGs are terrible to stream. They are just terrible to stream. I love them. It's my favorite genre. I'm never going to do it again. Well, flash forward about last year around this time, I just decided one day, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to play Final Fantasy VII on stream. I've never played it before. And I go through weird stints now where, like, I just start playing them, and I play about 3 or 4 or 5 in a row before I burn out, and they're hard to do on one side because they are slower. Typically, when I'm not doing those, I play games I finish within a day or two. Like, not that they're, like, short games, but, like, I play things from Dreamcast, N64, whatever, where they're like not that long anyway, maybe 10 hours, and I would finish.
Yeah, it's another era of gaming. Yeah, mm-hmm. Games weren't like that, you know, as long as today's game, you know.
Get it. Mm-hmm. So I'd like finish maybe 3 games a week, and then I go down to not finishing a single game during the week, and it was a hard adjustment for me, but I was enjoying it, and I'd find more people who were came out of the woodwork, or, you know, came out of Lurk, rather, that were like, oh my god, I love this game, and they've been watching me forever, so I kind of got to connect with people who had been there that I never got to before. And primarily what I streamed beforehand were horror games. So I played your Resident Evils, your Silent Hills, had a lot of that, but it was kind of a little monotonous because they were the same, even though like RPG, if you play a 4-hour one, it can be a little monotonous, the same thing every day. They kind of just like, you know, they're really short. And after a while, you kind of know them like the back of your hand, you run through them and you'd get the same people a lot, which is nice. But branching out into RPGs gave me a whole new community, a whole new appreciation for games I had never played. Because like, even like, you know, 5-10 years ago, thinking of playing in like Final Fantasy VII on my PS1, I'm like, oh god, no, that's so slow. That's going to take forever. Mm-hmm. And now like, it is slow. It takes forever. But now I get the benefit of having people who know exactly what's going on and know everything about the game, and they want to share it with me, which is a hard balance to find, because I feel like RPGs have the biggest amount of backseating in the community. So like, if you're trying to experience something for yourself, it's hard to kind of put like a barrier up. But if you don't understand something, there are 50 people waiting there to tell you this is exactly what you do to make the game busted. And I love that. I love that aspect of streaming RPGs, because someone knows some weird build or some weird glitch in the game that you wouldn't encounter in a lot of other short ones because they're too short to learn that. And yep. Also with like different ones being so popular, like Final Fantasy VII, some people are just waiting for that moment to see you go through the big pivotal scene, and it's a lot more emotional because you built up a rapport with characters for 20 hours, and then they're like, wouldn't it suck if one of them died? Like, I hope not, and then they do. And the whole communal reaction of just like, yes, now you know how we felt as children. It's a whole new experience for me, that like my favorite genre from offline becoming my favorite one for online, despite the difficulties with it of like a lot of downtime. It kind of just gave me a new, introduced me to a whole new community on Twitch that kind of made the monotony of it a little bit easier to deal with, mm-hmm. despite the length of the game.
Awesome. That answers my question. Thank you.
I could go on forever about all this stuff too, and like trying to limit myself what I'm saying is so hard right now too.
why limit yourself?
Because we'll be here for hours.
All right, well, so be it. But we have, like I said, some audience questions. Mm-hmm. I'll let Meredith ask them, but yeah, Meredith, take it away.
Cool, awesome. All right, so we have a few questions that our audience has submitted. And so the first one reads, I'm currently trying to get into gaming, but I don't know where to start. I see streamers like you with stacked setups, and it's kind of intimidating. If you had to give someone like me advice on where to begin and what resources to use while looking at hardware, consoles, video games, etc., what would it be?
So I'll start off by saying I don't condone piracy, but there is so much... You can find so much on. You can find so many resources online for that. Or a lot of these older games have been re-released in collections you can buy on Steam. So you don't think, like, you see all these hardware. A lot of these games that I play that are popular that you want to play. Say you want to play Mega Man. All the Mega Man games are available on Switch. They're available on Steam. They're available on PlayStation. Whatever your console of choice are. And if you don't want to get into buying the whole capture card stuff, because it's expensive. I just bought a new one that was on sale for $130. Which, for capture cards, that's not bad. For most people looking at it, they're like, $130, that's like groceries right. for like two yeah. weeks, if not the month. So you can find a lot of these games you want to play. Say you see someone playing Mega Man, you can buy Mega Man on Steam. They're always on sale. If you want to get into games, find something that appeals to you. Maybe it's the visuals, the music, the gameplay. And just find something, either a PC version of your console of choice, or find something similar to it. Just try out different things. Don't worry so much about having... I do understand the intimidation of people with like all the old consoles, all the consoles there, because that is something I worry about as well, because it kind of puts a gate up, and like there's a lot of gatekeeping within the retro community that a lot of people don't like to admit, but they see it and they see. That's why I don't even like to push the whole time saying all the time, oh, I'm on original hardware, because then someone that like my friend who might be playing the PC version or another one that she found when she was sailing the high seas, they'll see that and be like, well, you're not playing the real thing, so this isn't really that game. And there, it happens a lot in the community, and also happens a lot with women in the community. So I feel like it can push people out of gaming a lot. So I'd say, after, long story short of me, what I was saying, find something that appeals to you and just try it out. You can find a lot, or you can even find friends that borrow games from, and just try out anything and don't worry about where it's coming from.
Awesome. I know this question wasn't, you know, directed to me, but can I interject? I do have an opinion on this.
Well, go for it.
As with many matters, unfortunately, for our listeners. So if I had to recommend one thing for someone to get into retro, is get a Switch if you don't have one already, and just get the, you know, the Switch whatever online thing where you get the NES games, SNES games, N64 now, and Genesis as well. And, you know, they might add some more over time. And, you know, it costs like, you know, I don't even know, really cheap, like $30, $40 a year or something like that, maybe 50 at most. It's super cheap. And you get just a bunch of games from all these consoles, super high quality games, and you can play on the go as well. So that would be my recommendation
that
to get started.
That actually is a really good recommendation. I forgot about that. That online app, like, I think it's upwards now. If you want like everything included, it might be $50 to $80, but a little hack on that. If you have friends with Switches, you guys can all be on the family plan together. I am on a family plan with my friend who can up to 8.
We're going to have to cut some portions of this podcast.
Nintendo, even they said, like, just have a family plan is not an appropriate thing. You can even get it cheaper, but that online does have a lot. It even has save states and things that are quality of life improvements to let you enjoy games the way you want to.
Yep. Awesome.
Who knew?
Sorry.
Cool. No, it's good.
Dang it, no. Oh
my God, we have another question, Meredith.
We do. We sure do. All right, this one says, "Hi, Kiryu. I'm a big fan of retro Twitch streamers like you and love what you're doing for this niche community. What is your process for finding these beautiful retro games? Do you look through forums? Are they mostly fan recommendations? Or do you have a long list of games that you are currently going through?"
So it's a mix of all of those. So I have a list that I currently keep up of every game I own. And outside of on one page of that, which I have available for everyone to look at, are a bunch of games I'm looking for. A lot of those come from recommendations of people. So I'm like, I like Star Ocean. They're like, oh, you might like Tales of Destiny. So I look up Tales of Destiny. And of course, it costs like $300 now. But I have that on there as a list. And, you know, sometimes people, you know, sell them to me. Sometimes people offer them to me. Or sometimes like, hey, I found it in the shop and they'll get it for me. And then from there, like, playing the certain or different games on stream allows me to have the conversation. I'm like, I really like this. What else exists? Or even for me, like, I like to find other niche things people don't. So RPG, I know some of them, but there's a lot more I don't. But I'm like the go-to for niche horror and niche like Sega games. So someone like, I got a Sega Saturn. I'm like, what's on Sega Saturn no one's seen before that's a horror game that's only on there? Found some game called Deep Fear. Fantastic soundtrack, really weird voice acting, all that stuff. But then that's how I looked it up. I'm like, okay, that's all that's on. There's only like that, Resident Evil. And I start finding these from the genres I'm interested in or the console. And I do look those up on different lists, find them. And then that's kind of my whole process for it. But as far as what game to play next, like that process, I pretty much put up feelers until a bunch of people say they want a specific game and then I play it. That's how I'm at on the game I'm on. Someone's like, you've been playing this. What about Star Ocean? I'm like, that's a fantastic idea. I had that in mind already, wink. And that's how I got that next.
But isn't there like a website that could help with that kind of stuff? Like recommending like games? Because I feel like, for example, my whole collection is on Price Charting. All right. And like, I feel like it would be such a great idea, you know, not to, you know, toot my own horn here, but, you know, to use something like a collection site and basically like, you know, present to the person that owns a collection, like, hey, maybe like you want to play this game or that game or that game. I'm not saying like from a price charting perspective, you want to buy that game, but like, just use some kind of like database of games that you already have.
I think
there's
things like that for movies. They're like, I liked What We Do in the Shadows. What's similar to that movie? And then they're like, oh, well, here's something all with, you know, Jermaine Clement in it. So like, we don't really have that for games so much. Like there is price charting, but like that's really just looking up the price of it. But
right, it's not recommending games, right?
It's kind of like an untapped market because like there's so many games that have also just kind of gotten or fallen into obscurity. You can look up what are the best horror games on PS2 and you're going to get a top 10 and they're going to be all Silent Hill, Resident Evil, and Fatal Frame.
Yeah,
there's so many more than that. Like there's like Extermination. No one remembers that, but that came out as a launch title as a horror game. Or The Thing. A lot of those fall by the wayside. So it's kind of fallen onto people like me to recommend it. I even have like a channel point redemption, recommend me a game, like just give me a genre, something, and like either me or someone in here can find it for you. But someone should make that.
It's hard to beat human recommendation, if you will, you know, from someone that you have some type of connection with. For example, someone in your chat knows you, has been watching you for a while, knows the type of game you play, so can make a recommendation based on, you know, your taste, and at least, you know, their how they interpret your taste, if you will, right? So like same with music, you know, music is very difficult. You know, you're gonna have like these like Spotify and Tidal or whatever make recommendations like your mix and stuff like that. On Tidal they have your mix, but it's still like, I'm like, dude, that's not my mix. Like, I've been listening to music on your platform for years, you still don't get it. Like, this is not, they call it my mix, but it's just like, it's a bunch of new music that's like, you know, not really, I don't feel it like it appeals to me that much. It's like 1 out of 10. It's a very difficult thing to do when using like machine learning and stuff like that. Like, you know, it's hard. It's very hard, if not impossible, to be humans. I mean, I don't like to say possible. I really don't. But, you know,
that human element's not there for it. And like, I run into that with Spotify myself. Like, I'll look and I'm like, I want to listen to mid-2000s emo music. And then something from The Offspring pops up. I'm like, that's punk music. That's not emo music.
Yeah.
Or they're like, here's, you know, like some different Avril Lavigne. I'm like, I like it, but that's not emo music. That's Avril Lavigne. So the human element's really important. And
exactly.
I even run into like,
you know,
I even run into issues where people do recommend stuff for games and they're so completely off base that I don't know why the recommendation came out. Or things like, I'm not very big in the indie scene so much. Just especially coming from horror, because a lot of indie horror games are very samey. They're like those non-competitive, like linear narrative experiences, which aren't, they're just not for me. It's like I usually just, you know, I don't listen to anyone's, you know, recommendations, but my friend's like, you should play Sayonara Wild Hearts. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, begrudgingly, he sends it to me and I play it. And I'm like, oh my God, I love this game. But if someone just told me, hey, here's a music, indie music game, I'm like, no, thank you. But since I, sometimes you have to go out of that comfort zone to get those recommendations, it's really hard to find them now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool. Are we ready for some rapid fire questions?
I was just gonna say, I think it's about time. All right, let's go. All right, guys. So we're gonna ask Kiryu Hunter a bunch of questions so everyone can get to know him a little bit better. So are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, you have to answer these like as fast as possible. Like no thinking.
Okay.
You just go one way or the other. They're this or that.
No thoughts, head empty.
No, yeah, exactly. Zero thoughts. All right. Ready?
Ready.
Okay. Americans or Canadians?
Americans.
Good answer. Instagram or Twitter?
Boo.
Twitter.
Humans or centipedes?
Humans.
Podcasting or streaming?
Streaming.
Subway or McDonald's?
McDonald's.
Air or oxygen?
Air.
Elden Ring or Monster Hunter Rise?
Monster Hunter Rise.
Rap or jazz?
Jazz.
Reddit or Instagram?
Instagram.
Xbox or PlayStation?
PlayStation.
Chow mein or spaghetti?
Spaghetti.
Pants or no pants?
No pants.
Buzz cut or hair down to your belly button?
Hair down to your belly button.
Oof. TV shows or movies?
TV shows.
Console or PC?
Console.
Chocolate or strawberries?
Chocolate.
Apples or bananas?
Banana.
No video games for the rest of your life, or video games, but you don't have feet?
Video games, but I don't have feet.
You're thinking. Okay, I was going to say you're thinking.
Feet gone.
All right, what's 365 plus 422? Go.
7.
Correct. You crushed it. Cool. Thank you for playing.
There you go.
Math is my weakness.
Well. You scored pretty well.
I went to college for a while for math. I wanted to be a math teacher. Then I got to calculus, and I'm like, nope, I'm done with math. All of it's out of my brain. No, thank you.
You're like, honestly, very relatable. Thank you for playing. That was fun.
No problem.
This was very entertaining. One answer that I was really surprised by, I don't know why, when you answered Instagram over Reddit. Can you tell me why?
Instagram, you don't have to interact with anybody and you don't have to read the comments. Although I do like both because sometimes I'm like, you know what? I'm in the mood for some drama. I'm going to sort by controversial right. And go to bed. Like I'm going to read that. But sometimes I just want to see pictures. I'm just like, to show me pictures. Yeah.
It's more like dogs on Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Yes, all right. That is fair true. Enough. You got the dogs.
I am also not awesome. Sure why I said PlayStation because I own a Series X, but I don't own a PS5. It might just be manifesting my actual wishes right now, what I wish I had.
Well, there's one behind you right there, no? Isn't there? On your right?
On my right.
Yeah, isn't that a PS1 there? What is this?
Oh, the PS1, but...
Yeah, the PS1. Yeah. Not a PS5.
That and the PS2 were staring at me. I could feel the eyes in the back of my head.
Well, Louis, Kyoryu, Hunter, thank you so much for being part of episode 13 of StreamForge Radio. It was a real pleasure to have you. Absolutely. We can find you online at twitch.tv Kyoryu Hunter. That's KYORYU HUNTER. So KYORYU Hunter. Same on Twitter. Same on TikTok, my man. Let's go. What do you do on TikTok? Before we go, I'm curious.
So TikTok, initially I just used it to dump Twitch clips and see where that went. But then I started doing things, retro games. It's a good thing because people just want to see your collection sometimes. And then other times I do a little like a mini series here and there about like bisexual representation in video games, which is not very good. Not the series isn't very good. The representation's not very good in games.
Right.
So, going through that here and there and mostly just flexing my collection.
Awesome. I'll definitely give you a follow there. And guys, I invite you all to do the same on Twitch, Twitter, and TikTok. You'll find all the links in the description of this podcast below, whether you're on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or any other podcasting platform. You can comment, by the way, guys, on who you want us to interview next. In a comment section down below. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to leave a positive review, like and share to your family, friends, and it's always a pleasure to have you listening and giving us some feedback as well on the podcast. Louis, is there anything you want to say or add or tell our audience before we go?
No. Thank you for having me on, and don't gatekeep retro from people.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys, and we'll be back next Tuesday, as always, with another episode. Thanks for listening.